A quick note before we begin that this episode does contain some adult language. It was June 2017, and the Barclays Center in Brooklyn was packed. Nearly every seat of the arena was filled with thousands of Baruch College graduates and their families.
I'm looking at all the parents, I'm looking at balloons, I'm seeing horns, just people smiling. I think I had a smile on my face probably the whole time.
Kwamed Francis was graduating second in his class, which meant he had one of the best seats in the house.
I was on stage, and it was just like, wow, I'll be seated next to, you know, some distinguished people.
The year before, Senator Chuck Schumer had been the commencement speaker. This year, though, was different, because this year, the person giving the speech was also graduating, just like Kwamed.
Welcome, Baruch College, class of 2017.
As soon as he walks on stage, this tall guy, long hair, slick back, it looked like he just pulled out the robe out of his trunk and he's like, all right, I got to don this little thing for this ceremony. But I think if he had it his way, he'd be in a t-shirt and some Vans.
Adam Newman, all 6 feet 5 inches of him, had taken 15 years from his first class to finally get his college degree. But here he was. He looked out at a sea of black mortar boards and clasped his hands together in what looked like a gesture of prayer.
It's my honor and privilege to graduate with all of you today.
With his billowing robe, flowing black hair, and arms outstretched, Adam looked more like a preacher than what he actually was, the CEO of a multi-billion dollar startup called WeWork. And Adam was here to spread the spirit of We.
It was definitely not a traditional commencement speech.
The next revolution is going to be the We Revolution. And the We Revolution is going to be led by the We Generation. And the We Generation does not discriminate between age, race, gender, or religion.
They're throwing their hands up, they're fist pumping, you know, people are standing up and cheering them on. You could think of somebody being the life of the party, you could think of him.
So as Kwamed and the other students listened, Adam told them his story. How he had first moved to New York from Israel to get a degree at Baruch College.
I spent my first 2 years in Baruch studying a little bit and partying a lot.
But then, a close friend of his came from Israel to visit.
He looked at me and said, "Is this why you left Israel? Is this why you left your family and your loved ones, everyone you care about, to go party in New York City?" I was inspired by his words and by his harsh criticism. I woke up the next morning and said, "It's time to start my first business adventure."
Eventually, Adam left Baruch behind as his business career took off. But he was here today, he said, because even after he'd become a billionaire, all his grandma ever wanted was for him to finish college.
Savta Esti, who paid for my full tuition, she really did want me to graduate. She really did. And she kept asking me every year, "When are you graduating? When are you graduating?" And I said, "Esti, you know, we've done, I have a family, we built this, we're doing well." "No, when are you graduating? I need to hang it above my bed."
It was a good story, and Adam was a great storyteller.
He commanded a presence unlike any other. He definitely took everybody's attention, so it was just very different. A different kind of message.
We are we, and if we work together, we cannot be stopped.
We work. The business Adam founded was more than just a company to him. Yes, he wanted to become the world's first trillionaire, but he also truly believed that his company would fundamentally change not just how people work, but how they live, how they raise children, how they communicate with one another. Adam believed he was on the brink of making history. And in a way, you know, he was. Because Adam Newman was about to preside over the largest, fastest wipeout of shareholder value by a single company since Enron. Looking back, maybe the most telling moment of the whole commencement speech was when he shared a story about his first date with his wife.
Rebecca went on the first date with me, and within 5 minutes, now I say 5 minutes to be nice, but it truly took 10 seconds, she looked me straight in the eye and she said, "You, my friend, are full of shit."
It would take the world almost a decade to figure out just how right his wife was.
Jeffrey Epstein is dead. Before his many victims, the search for justice is still alive because Epstein had help, lots of help. And on the newest season of Broken, host and investigator Tara Palmieri follows Epstein survivors as they track down those who enabled and witnessed his crimes to hold them accountable. Broken, Seeking Justice, is a podcast that documents the journey of these women to find out what justice looks like in their lives, including their battle against the government to change how it treats victims of child sex abuse. They're naming names, they're seeking justice, and sometimes they even find it. Listen to Broken, Seeking Justice wherever you get podcasts.
Experience the new season of Business Wars 1 week early and ad-free on Wondery Plus. This season, we dive into the business of wine with The Gallows, whose winery, after trials, lies, and murder, is now the largest in the state of California. Join Wondery Plus and the Wondery app to listen to Business Wars 1 week early and ad-free. Start your free trial today.
From Wondery, I'm David Brown, the host of Business Wars, and this is We Crash. Over the past decade, WeWork has become known for its cool, flexible office space, free beer, fruity water, and kombucha on tap. It's been the glossy poster child of startup America and the millennial workforce. At its peak, WeWork was valued at $47 billion. That's worth more than Uber or even the Ford Motor Company. Adam Neumann convinced many of his employees, Wall Street investors, and the press that this was the start of a we revolution. But was it really all about we? Or was it all about Adam? I've been the host of Business Wars, and before that, I anchored Public Radio's Marketplace. As a journalist, I've covered plenty of breathlessly hyped companies. But you know, the story of WeWork is a particularly crazy story of excess, hubris, and unrealistic expectations. In fact, I've rarely ever seen it play out so vividly in the business world. We're pleased to bring you this six-part series on the rise and fall of WeWork, and this is episode one. In the beginning, there was Adam. It was 2010, and Lisa Skye Hain was excited. Her last week had been a whirlwind. She'd first met with her new boss on a Wednesday, and by Friday, she had a job offer. When Lisa woke up Monday morning for her first day, she had an email waiting from her new boss.
February 1st, and it looks like it was 1:20 a.m., and he wrote, "Good morning, let's build the largest networking community on the planet." And it was sent via his BlackBerry by AT&T to my AOL email address.
The email was from Adam Neumann.
And I remember thinking, all right, I'm about to be on a ride.
At the time, WeWork was just four people.
I think my title was founding community manager. But I actually don't know what I put on a LinkedIn at this point. I think it was like head of community. I mean, the reality is that I had many, many hats.
On Lisa's first day on the job, WeWork had zero tenants. They just managed to secure their first location, and they were scrambling to get it ready.
And so I was sales, tours, billing, booking, IT, janitor. I mean, whatever they needed, that's what got done. It was just a natural fit to be helping to open shared office space communities in buildings. I love creating community, connecting people.
So Adam pushed Lisa to get as many members as she could.
I remember showing up, my first week of work, and, Adam basically said, okay, we're going to open the first 17 offices in the building in 3 weeks, and I want to be full with a wait list. And so from the very beginning, he's always been like, go, 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 like arms surged forward, like, let's do this.
WeWork's first location was at the corner of Grand and Lafayette in Manhattan, Soho. It had a red brick facade with six rickety floors of high ceilings, large windows, and bucket loads of what real estate agents in New York City like to call charm.
And that first building, 154 Grand, is not a Class A or B building or maybe even C or D. I mean, it's like a Class D building where the elevator literally is so old that it would take 52 seconds to go from the first floor up to the sixth floor.
And for an elevator in New York City, that's a lifetime. Lisa shadowed Adam on a few tours and watched closely how he pitched the co-working space to prospective tenants.
When you toured with Adam, you were being taken on a ride. I think with his vision, you know, he would look out the window and say, that empty parking lot is going to be transformed into a beautiful garden. And you're going to have all of these other different types of professionals who are here that you're going to be able to connect with and create community with. And you're going to eat lunch and spend all this time and do business together. And downstairs, we're going to have a gym. And, you know, it was always a big vision.
The small crew hustled to get the space ready by opening day.
The 3 weeks leading up to then was me giving tours every day, stepping over people who were in construction, dust everywhere.
The other co-founder, Miguel McKelvey, was in charge of the design. He wanted the offices to have exposed brick walls, so they needed to soda blast the old paint off. Miguel would tell NPR about it years later.
We would rent zip cars, drive out to this place in New Jersey, load up the car with like these bags of baking soda, and we'd put so much in there that it would be like riding on the wheels, on the tires. So we'd be like driving back from New Jersey through the tunnel, and you'd hear this like...
Even Lisa, whose job was to sign up customers, was doing manual labor.
Screwing legs in on desks and putting, you know, lamps on all the tables and plugging in extension cords under tables and rolling in filing cabinets. And I was printing welcome notes to put on people's desks. And it was just nuts.
Well, the end result was something. Yeah, the elevator may have been creaky. Sure, maybe the floors squeaked. But in the end, the building looked pretty amazing. They opened one floor at a time, filling each one with tenants. But they had more wannabe WeWorkers than they had space for.
We were literally pushing, you know, to the night before, you know, with the opening of every floor. We would just be push, 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 get the floor open. And so there's dust everywhere. It was always, again, a sort of rush to get the floor done. It was as fast as you can.
That fall in 2010, Lisa channeled her old job as an on-air reporter to host an online video for her new company.
Welcome to WeWork After Dark. This is the monthly happy hour that we have down here in Soho. Tonight is a very exciting night because we are celebrating 170 offices, 185 companies, and 350 members that we brought into a building in just over 6.5 months. We have...
As the DJ spun the Black Eyed Peas, WeWork tenants, members, talked about how their experience was different from other workplaces.
What did you love about it?
First of all, I just love the open airiness. Right. Because I'm all about, I love openness and airiness.
Sure.
Adam was there too, standing a good foot taller than Lisa, dressed in a black V-neck t-shirt and collarless black leather jacket. He was 31, but he looked even younger.
I think we're changing the way people do business, and I think that's what it's all about. We want to make a game changer, and I think this business is on its way to be one.
See, America was still in the hangover of the Great Recession. It was the start of what would become known as the gig economy. And WeWork was tapping into what seemed like the perfect formula for a new workforce.
It is becoming a community that's sharing talent and sharing work and sharing vision. And as the future is going to move forward, we're going to do more and more in that. We're going to share our work, we're going to share our nonprofit work, and we're going to share socially. And we're going to make each other responsible for other people. So if someone next to us is going to be doing bad, it's going to be our job to pick them up.
WeWork was only a six-month-old company. It only had a single location. Yet Adam's vision of the future already sounded remarkably clear. He was thinking big about what WeWork could accomplish. And why not? WeWork already needed a second location to keep up with demand. Adam and Miguel looked around Manhattan and set their sights on some empty office space right across the street from the Empire State Building. But there was just one problem. The building didn't want some upstart subleasing company as their tenant. But Adam had a plan. He invited David Czar, son of the wealthy family that owned the building, for a tour of WeWork's Soho offices. Adam wanted to show David Czar that what he'd built was special. And he wanted to offer him a drink. As night fell outside the floor-to-ceiling windows, Adam, the Israeli, and David, the Iranian, talked for hours. They drank. Adam pitched his vision for the second location, and they drank some more. What Adam wanted that night was a signed lease. He kept hammering David. It was the kind of thing that would happen for Adam again and again. When he really wanted something, he wouldn't stop until he got it. It took a half a bottle of Johnny Walker Black, but finally, sometime late into the night, Adam closed the deal. Adam reportedly expected that David would have some misgivings. So the next day, when David came back to him, Adam had a response ready. I understood that Persians were men of their word. In the end, David Czar agreed to honor the deal, whether he liked it or not. WeWork's model of renting and subleasing office space desk by desk was shaking up the New York real estate landscape. Lisa remembers that Adam was looking to expand even more.
I can see that from the very beginning, he was in and out with prospective investors, I'm sure prospective landlord partners.
A few co-working spaces in Manhattan was nice, sure, but Adam was ready to go even bigger. And for that, he needed to convince investors to give him a lot more money.
Hey guys, I'm Nikki Boyer, host of The Daily Smile. Jasmine Williams found her destiny at just 14 years old.
I just remember it sounded so cool, so dope. It was like rap and MC and monologue and feelings and everything. And that was my first introduction. I said, I want to do that.
Now she's sharing her passion and her art with people all over the world. Listen to Coming Full Circle at the Poetry Lounge on The Daily Smile on Wondery Plus, Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everybody, I'm Patrick Wyman, the host of Wondery's show, Tides of History. Tides of History takes you deep into the roots of our present-day world and brings you the lived experiences of people from the past. In our newest episode, we talk about megalithic Europe. What happened when the first farmers of Europe, 6,000 years ago, put down roots and stuck around? How their new trade networks, new luxury and prestige items, new social structures, and new beliefs produced the megaliths, the standing stones and enormous tombs that still dot the landscape of Western Europe today. Come learn about the explosion of monuments, like the Tumulus de Saint-Michel at Carnac in Brittany, an enormous mound, 125 meters long, 60 meters wide, and 10 meters tall. 35,000 cubic meters of rock and dirt. We'll travel into tombs. We'll join torch-led chanting processions down dark, narrow passageways deep into earth-covered mounds. To listen to this and other great stories, subscribe to Tides of History on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or the Wondery app.
In the spring of 2012, Adam Neumann was giving maybe his most important tour yet of WeWork. Bruce Dunleavy, a thin, balding guy in his mid-50s, was a partner at one of the big Silicon Valley investment firms, and Bruce's company had backed tech giants like eBay, Twitter, and Uber. When a friend first told him and his colleagues about WeWork, they didn't think much of it.
Generally all said, yeah, that doesn't sound very interesting because it's just a real estate business and we don't know anything about real estate.
But after a few positive phone calls with Adam, Bruce decided he had to meet him in person.
I talked him on the phone and I said, come on out to California. He said, no, you come to me.
Bruce admired the chutzpah. Most startup entrepreneurs looking for funding would have jumped on the next plane. But Adam firmly believed people had to experience WeWork for themselves to understand it. Now here Bruce was in New York to see for himself what Adam and his co-founders had built.
We met at the unit across from the Empire State Building. I went up to the 8th floor and I met Adam and we walked around the 8th floor and walked around the 9th floor and talked about business. We left there and walked down to the next unit and then walked to the meatpacking and then walked to the Barrack Street Building. So we did a lot of walking and a lot of talking.
Bruce spent the whole day with Adam. What he saw was a company catering to the habits of a new workforce, one that wanted flexibility and community. WeWork wasn't shared office space. It was a real-life social network. The economics of the business looked good, and he was impressed with Adam.
I liked him immediately. Adam's just a charming, charismatic person who is very persuasive to a lot of people.
Bruce was in. But as they started to negotiate the size of the investment, Bruce believed Adam was valuing WeWork too high. You only have three buildings, Bruce told him. Adam, as usual, didn't miss a beat. What do you mean? I have hundreds of buildings. They're just not built yet. They closed the deal, along with several other major investors, and Bruce took a seat on the board. Suddenly, WeWork had millions of new investment. Within a year, its valuation was north of $300 million. And for the first time, they had some serious cash to burn. Adam knew just what to do. Party.
Yay. Thank you. Thank you.
Adam walked onto the outdoor stage and took the mic. A full band stood behind him, a drunken crowd of WeWork employees in front. This was summer camp, WeWork's weekend-long party in upstate New York. White marquee tents flanked the stage, which was lit up by red lights. Adam's hair was in a ponytail, a red Kabbalah string bracelet around his wrist.
I am so happy to have all of you here tonight. Who was here last year? Raise your hand if you were here last year.
The crowd went nuts, jumping up and down, while behind Adam, the band sipped from their water bottles, looking unimpressed. One musician politely clapped his hand against his trumpet. Summer camp would become a WeWork tradition. It was a chance for employees to act like big kids, you know, kayaking, face painting, pie eating contests, and drinking. Lots and lots of drinking. As usual, Adam's speech went heavy on the spiritual stuff.
Thank you for being part of something that actually has a meaning. And what puts us together, all of us here, is every one of us is here because it has a meaning, because we want to do something that actually makes the world a better place, and we want to make money doing it.
Adam threw his hands up in a shrug, and the crowd went wild.
Adam Newman, they want one more day!
Summer camp was over, but the party kept going. In February 2014, Adam closed WeWork's biggest deal yet. High-profile investors, including billionaire real estate mogul Mort Zuckerman and J.P. Morgan, poured another $150 million into the company. WeWork was now officially a unicorn, the magic term that meant it was valued at more than $1 billion.
It was a group of the wealthiest families in the world.
It was March 2014, and Scott Galloway was sitting in front of an audience in Miami.
I was in a suit out of respect for the organization, and he was in jeans and a blazer and a t-shirt.
Scott Galloway was a respected business school professor at NYU, and he was here to interview Adam. This was J.P. Morgan's Alternative Investment Summit. In the crowd, hundreds of the bank's biggest clients.
Simply put, he's dreaming.
Scott had never met the WeWork CEO before.
You know, he's a very handsome guy. He's got a great accent. He's very charismatic. I mean, you want to believe this story. It was sort of this cross between, at least aesthetically, between Jesus Christ and Nacho, the famous polo player.
Right away, Scott could tell this guy was a character.
One of the things I remember is halfway through our interview, he took off one of his shoes and was just kind of like letting it all hang out.
In front of this crowd of very serious investors, Scott was not there just to ask softball questions. So he asked Adam about potential competition. Wasn't Adam worried that big real estate moguls with lots of property could simply start their own co-working spaces in those properties and beat WeWork at its own game?
He began talking about culture, and this is a movement. And quite frankly, it just all sounded like bullshit, that a lot of it was yoga babble.
Yoga babble, by the way, is a term Scott coined. He's even created a yoga babble index, which rates the bullshit level of corporate slogans and buzzwords.
And it's a good yoga babble. It's yoga babble addressed in a really good-looking bow and great wrapping, but it was a lot of talk about movement and culture and spiritual awakening and empowerment and, you know, raising, if you will, our collective consciousness. That was a line that he used.
Scott wasn't convinced. Still, he was impressed.
I said, dude, I have no idea about this concept, but in my next life, I'm coming back as you. And the whole audience erupted into laughter because they looked at this guy and you thought, who doesn't want to be a 30-something-year-old male living in Manhattan, deploying billions of dollars and creating a company worth tens of billions of dollars?
With his rock star looks and growing success, Adam was living a lot of people's fantasy, including a lot of people in that audience.
This was tapping into a community of entrepreneurs, tapping into kind of the new economy, disrupting one of the largest asset classes in the world. What could go wrong?
Coming up on this season of We Crashed.
I'm always suspicious of people who are charming because my dad liked to remind me that Ted Bundy was charming.
I genuinely believe he thought he was building something great. I think Elizabeth Holmes thought she was building something great.
And I said we, you said what? We what?
Who does this? Do all the people at Deloitte go, Deloitte, right? Or Goldman? Goldman Sachs. Nobody does that. It's weird. It's just so weird.
You're not elevating anyone's consciousness, buddy. You're running a fucking desk.
From Wondery, this is episode 1 of 6 of We Crashed, about what happens when idealism and greed run headlong into business reality. You can subscribe to We Crashed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you want to hear more great business stories, you can subscribe to another Wondery podcast I host called Business Wars, which takes you inside some of the biggest rivalries in business. And you can get access to both series ad-free on Wondery Plus at Wondery.com/PLUS. If you like what you've heard, we would love it if you give us a 5-star rating and tell your friends how to subscribe. I'm your host, David Brown. Natalie Robomed wrote this story. Heather Schrering reported this story. Sound design by Jake Gorski. Our consultants are Corey Weinberg for The Information and Scott Galloway. Additional reporting by Sarah Kessler. Our associate producer is Caleb Bissinger. Our executive producers are Jenny Lauer-Beckman, George Lavender, and Marsha Louie. Created by Hernan Lopez for Wondery.
Wondery Plus is excited to introduce Imagined Sleep. Stories for you to fall asleep to. See how vibrant these sleep worlds are with this preview of Moosehead Lake. The episode begins with a soft, soothing hum to ground you while you tuck into bed. Then comes the trickle of water running off the leaves and into the lake. And finally, some inviting, velvety narration.
You sail gently through the night, under a cascade of stars, like all the children, under all the blankets, and all the windows in the gorgeous world.
Imagine Sleep is a Wondery Plus exclusive. Start your free trial at Wondery Plus in the Wondery app today. Wondery. Feel the story.